Everybody, welcome to the True Crime Squad. I'm Christy Brower, here with my sister, co-host, and partner in crime, Katie Weaver. Hey, Katie.
Hello.
How's it going?
Oh, I am a ball of nerves. My beloved Boise State basketball is playing their first, game in the NCAA tournament right now. Like, it's going to start here in a few minutes. And I hate games.
You're scared.
I hate these games. Yeah. Well, because, you know, once you get to postseason, it can all be over at any moment, you know?
Right. Yeah. Oh, yeah.
This could be it tonight, or maybe they'll win.
Is this
a
single elimination kind of situation?
Oh, yeah. The thing is, Boise has never won a postseason, an NCAA game before, ever.
Really?
This is their third year in a row of going. Their program is really, really growing, but they're having a hard time getting legitimacy because they always go to the big dance and immediately lose. So
dang it.
And then the chips are really stacked against them tonight. So all the good energy for Boise State, all the good.
Yes,
energy.
All the good energy.
But honestly, they've had such a good season. It's fine either way, but you know, you want to see them win. So that's all.
Yes, you do. That's all. You do want to see them win. Well,
these are really, first world problems. So
True, but you do love this team.
I really do, yeah.
Well, speaking of Boise, this is our case updates show, and we're going to kick this off with a very scary thing that occurred in Boise, Idaho, early this morning. This happened at about 2:30 this morning, around 2:30 this morning, at a hospital called St. Alphonsus in Boise. And the situation is that they had an inmate. His name is Skylar Mead. I'm going to show you his picture. This is him. But this is actually a more current picture of him. He's got a whole bunch of tattoos on his face.
Prison tattoos?
It appears so.
Because he's been in prison since 2016.
Yeah, so he's been in prison in Idaho for quite a while. He had some injuries that required treatment. They took him to St. Alphonsus for that. And when the prison employees were taking him out they were in the ambulance bay to transport him back to the prison. A man who was unknown at the time ran in with a gun and started shooting, and three Idaho Department of Corrections employees were shot and injured, and the unknown man and Skylar Mead took off. So Skylar Mead has escaped from prison. Uh-huh. He is now with his accomplice. This is the missing person's poster. So we have Skylar Mead there, and then we also have Nicholas D. Umfenauer. Now, here's a little bit better picture of the two of them. These two men are from a white supremacist gang. So thanks, Idaho, for being stereotypical as usual. As you know, Idaho, particularly northern Idaho, but it does happen pretty much everywhere in this state, has had a problem with white supremacists, or what we grew up knowing as skinheads, for a very long time. And, you know, if you take a look at this, you'll know why they're known as skinheads, because they all shave their heads. Anyway, so this was a really scary situation. We don't often have shootouts at hospitals in Idaho. We're kind of a small state by population, and we're behind the times as it comes to these shooting situations. Mm-hmm. And these men are now armed and on the run from the police. And of course, Skylar is an escaped prisoner from the Idaho Department of Corrections.
Yep.
So it's really scary. I was going to tell you, let's see. So there's an arrest warrant now for Nicholas Umfenauer. He's facing two charges of aggravated battery against law enforcement, and one charge of aiding and abetting an escape.
Yeah,
we didn't know who he was until this afternoon.
Mm-hmm.
But, you know, they're basically saying they are armed and considered dangerous. Skylar Meade is primarily in jail for attacking police officers.
Yeah.
He has a long history of violent crime.
Yeah.
And he carries that out specifically against police officers.
Mm-hmm.
It's believed now that he caused some wounds to his face and body.
Mm-hmm.
Transport to St. Alphonsus. This was a totally planned setup situation.
He was in solitary in the highest level of security due to behavior.
Yeah, he's a real gem, mm-hmm. as you can tell.
Yep.
Here in the gem state.
Yep. So they were, according to Routers, they're both members of the Aryan Knights.
Ugh. God. Disgusting jackasses.
Yep.
Yeah, so he's got tattoos on each side of his face. One side is the number one, and the other side is the number 11. He also has a teardrop.
Of course.
The numbers represent the first and 11th letters of the alphabet, A and K, for Aryan Knights.
Ugh.
Great. Awesome. And cool. Now they're on the run.
Mm-hmm.
So there's a blue alert issued by the Idaho State Police, and people are basically saying, if you see these guys, do not approach them. Just call the police. But unfortunately, they are not afraid at all of injuring police officers. It's a scary situation. The hospital was on lockdown for a little while. The thing is, I mean, once Nicholas got a hold of Skylar Meade, they were out of there.
Right. And then we had all these injured officers.
Yeah. Who at least were injured in the hospital bay or in the ambulance bay.
Yeah.
But yeah, it's a really scary thing. Mm-hmm. We got like an Amber Alert style alert on our phones this morning about this. But unfortunately, that alert didn't go out until about 7 hours after this incident occurred. So.
Right. They could be anywhere.
Right. They could be anywhere.
This was definitely. Car.
Yeah. It's a blue or it's a gray Honda Civic.
Mm-hmm. Of course, they're likely not in it anymore.
Probably not. They're probably not even in the state of Idaho by now. I mean, they could have gone way out of this state in this amount of time. They really don't have a clue where he is. But it does make you wonder, Journey to Justice says, do you think it's an inside job? Well, it does make you wonder how this dude knew that he was going to, especially because he's been in solitary.
Right.
So all his, how was he communicating with this person? How did they know when he was going to be at St. Alphonsus? How did he know when he was being released? Like, how was that information passed along to the accomplice?
But this happened after he got stitched up and taken care of?
Yeah, he was already treated.
Okay.
They were loading him up into the ambulance to take him back to the prison.
I'm guessing he didn't until he got to the hospital.
And maybe that's possible that he somehow got that information out at that point. But how? I mean, were people not watching this dude? There's no. How did this information get shared?
I can't imagine. But you never know. Could have a hospital staff been careless with their phone? Or, you know, who knows? I think possibilities. Inside job is definitely a good possibility.
It is.
Yeah.
Yeah, this guy definitely is major trash, and so is his accomplice, and we need to get a hold of them and get them locked up as soon as possible because they are very dangerous people.
Mm-hmm.
And then there's got to be a big investigation on this incident to figure out how did this even happen?
Yep.
Very scary.
Mm-hmm.
So that's what we know about the situation. We'll keep you updated on it as we see more, but mm-hmm. you know, what I'm hoping is we're going to see him get caught very soon. before they hurt anybody else. Because obviously they have no qualms about shooting people.
No, and I hope they do get a hold of them. And I hope they do find out exactly how they knew. And I hope we get to learn that, you know?
Yeah, I hope so too.
All of those things. Yeah.
Definitely. Most definitely. Something else to let you know about what was he locked up for. Assault on police officers. Let's see. Tonight is our watch party. So if you are a member of our YouTube channel and you're a member of the watch party, then you get to come join our live chat tonight. We are watching Lover, Stalker, Killer on Netflix. It is a documentary. The case will sound familiar to you. We've talked about it a little bit, but it's very fascinating to get to see the story, the whole story. Around this case. This is that case where a man was being stalked by his ex-girlfriend for about 4 years, only to learn that maybe it wasn't the ex-girlfriend doing the stalking. So I won't give up anything else, but it is a pretty interesting story. So we'll be watching that on Netflix. That starts at 8:15 Mountain. Uh-huh. So come join us if you are a member of the watch party. And Katie, why don't you tell us, we found out something in the James Crumbly situation that was pretty interesting. You want to tell us about that?
Yeah. You may remember that James Crumbly ended up being limited just as his trial started from communications from the jail because of making threats. And at the time, we didn't know who the threats were posed to. Now we do, and they were to the prosecutor. And she has not released the threats, but she did have a sit-down interview and has talked somewhat about what they were about. And she also let a reporter from the WXYZ Detroit. I don't know why that was hard to say. Simon Sackmet. Take a look at them. And so there are a few things to share there. She said that Crumbly, and these were in conversations with his sister, apparently, said that he was coming for the prosecutor and referencing her going to hell. She said, he said he hoped I was listening when he threatened me physically. She said, one of the most disturbing threats was January of 2024. That was the same month the first day of trial was set for one of the defendants. I consider that recent. Well, yeah. She said that, you know, it was addressed the proper way between the prosecutor's office and the sheriff's office to shut him down. That, you know, this wasn't a personal vendetta against him, but you don't get to make threats against the prosecutor, period.
No, you sure don't. And if he wasn't already in jail, he'd be in jail for that.
Mm-hmm.
They should charge him.
Mm-hmm. They absolutely should. So, you know, she said that she's not afraid and she's absolutely not going to back down. She's going to continue to support the Oxford families and they're going to continue to, you know, defend their prosecutions here between both of these guys, both of their convictions. And she said, you know, she's not scared in any way, but she's also not going to put up with it.
Right. What a fool. Like he's on trial with this prosecutor and he's threatening her.
Yeah.
Yeah. That was really going to help.
You're not tough, James. You're not tough.
No,
you're not cool. You're nothing. Yeah.
You're trash. And you're now a convicted murderer.
Mm-hmm.
But I hope they charge him. I hope he gets more time for that. You can't just be doing that. You know, you can't be trying to intimidate the prosecutor in your case, like, and in your wife's case.
Well, and the fact that he was making these threats to his sister, who then took the stand and testified on his behalf. Okay, Becky. Yeah. Real nice.
So stupid. Why would you speak for him after that?
Mm-hmm.
Very, very bizarre.
Yeah.
Speaking of bizarre, there is a law being proposed in Idaho right now that Interestingly enough, one of the attorneys, public defenders, that is arguing against the expansion of the death penalty in Idaho. So they're trying to expand the death penalty to child sexual abuse cases in Idaho, mm-hmm. which frankly just makes me sick because people abused of child sexual abuse in Idaho get very short sentences.
Oh, yeah.
So someone, some genius in our legislature is trying to pass a law to make the death penalty possible for child sexual abuse. Well, if y'all have been following us for a while, you know that Idaho has a huge problem in that we have very few death penalty certified attorneys. Poor Jim Archibald, I don't think even is sleeping right now because he's on several of these cases. Mm-hmm. And, you know, so is, what's her name, Ann Taylor, who is on Koberger's case in Northern mm-hmm. Idaho. She is the only death penalty certified attorney in Northern Idaho. Mm-hmm. So it is not an easy thing to deal with death penalty cases. And she said, this is insane. We don't have anywhere near the resources to even be able to try cases like this. Because mm-hmm. if somebody gets a public defender, they have to be supplied a death penalty certified public defender within 14 days of the, you know, statement that, hey, this is going to be a death penalty case.
Yeah.
So, you know, Ann Taylor's like, oh, well, you're just going to pull some of those attorneys out of your ass because they don't exist. We don't have them.
Yeah.
Also, it's insane.
Yeah.
We're going to go from, oh, they might get an 18-month rider or they might just get probation so we don't mess up their lives mm-hmm. to the death penalty.
The death penalty. We'll go ahead and just kill them instead.
Can't we just, I don't know, get sentencing reform in child sex abuse cases so that judges can and will, frankly, because honestly, Judge Boyce, who is the judge on the Daybell-Vallow trials, is painfully soft on child sex abusers.
Yes, he is.
But we could just use our own laws and do a lot better, and they could improve the sentencing structures for those cases so that they get more time. But jumping from what we have now to the death penalty is so stupid.
It's crazy. Why?
Especially considering that Idaho can't even successfully execute anybody anyway.
It's so dumb and it's so unnecessary. But this is just more of the performative stuff that our legislature is doing. Yeah. And honestly, this is a law that would probably immediately, if passed, be challenged in court and lose.
It would because these have already been, these other states have done them and...
Yep.
They're unconstitutional.
Yep.
It's stupid. It's such a waste of time. Like, solve actual problems we're having, not just creating more. Yep. It is ridiculous.
Well, and Lynn has a super good point. Wouldn't that stop Mormon people and everyone else? Wouldn't that make them even less likely to report than they already do? Yep, exactly.
It may. I don't know. I don't know that the death penalty is very useful in that respect, because when someone gets the death penalty, it takes 20, 30, 40 years for them to be executed anyway. So I don't know. Paula said, though, if everything is a death penalty case, there is no reason to keep the victim alive. Mm-hmm. Well, that's a very valid point, Paula. So these might just become child murder cases.
Interesting.
Because if they're going to get the death penalty anyway, why keep a victim alive who can testify against them? It's so stupid. We have a lot of junior legislators who get in on a single issue and then they decide they're going to get a law through, and because our legislature does nothing but fuck around for half the year because we're their only part-timers anyway mm-hmm. with this stuff, and then they never actually pass anything. I mean, it's the same thing that happened when they passed reinstating the firing squad a couple of years ago. Mm-hmm. Which may really never actually even happen because logistically it's insane. Nobody ever talked to the Department of Corrections before they passed the stupid law. Like, there's no money for it. There's no structure, no plan for it. It's ridiculous. Mm-hmm. But yeah, let's look at why not do sentence reform?
Right.
Why not do judge reform? and get rid of, I don't know, all our judges, because none of them give child sex abusers anything close to what they could get.
Because that's not the performative show that our legislature wants to put on.
Right.
They're doing a big performance right now.
Yep. They're going to be tough on child sexual abuse. Really? Mm-hmm. Why don't you start looking at what's happening now? Because it's not shit. Our grandfather went to prison for sexually abusing a cousin.
Yeah.
He served 6 months of his 3 to 5 year sentence.
Yep.
And that was back in the late 80s.
Yeah.
And it's not gotten any better. But now we're just going to go, oh, okay. Instead, we'll just give him the death penalty. It's so stupid. God.
Yep.
Idaho, I'm so sick of this shit.
Amen. Hey, Carrie.
Our legislature is full of dumbasses, you guys. Hey, yeah. Carrie.
Hey, fellas.
You know, you're from Boise. You know what kind of bullshit we're putting up with here, don't you? And be careful, Carrie. I'm sure you know about the shooting from at St. Al's today. Scary shit.
Yeah.
Okay. I will get off my soapbox, but we're not going to get off from Idaho because, Katie, there's been a little update in the Thomas Creech situation.
But wait, there's more. So, as you know, Thomas Creech was not executed when they tried. They tried 8 times to get a vein and couldn't do so. And everyone was like, I have read the craziest conspiracies from people that are like, that was on purpose. The people that were supposed to be getting the vein didn't try hard enough. They didn't, you know, all this shit that I'm like, what are you talking about? They were there to do their job. They were unable to do it. I'm a nurse. If they'd called me, I could do it. Oh, just shut the fuck up. Anyway, well, here's what we know now. Thomas Creech, it was very well known that he was in poor health. The man was in a vascular center not too long ago getting medical care. He's been in the hospital several times in the last 2 years. He has collapsed and had to be taken by ambulance to the hospital recently. They should have known.
When in a vascular center? Like, you know, veins?
Wait, no, not veins. Yeah.
You mean he has a vein problem? What?
The fact that they were carrying forward with this in the first place, knowing damn well that he was having problems with his vascular system, is crazy. They knew going into this that they probably weren't going to be able to do it. Is that not nuts?
But what choice do they have? Because the governor wouldn't commute the sentence. Like, they went through all the stuff. They did all the appeals. And if the Department of Corrections gets told they have to do it, they have to do it, even if they know damn well they can't do it.
Yep.
It's so stupid.
Mm-hmm.
God, I'm tired of this state.
Mm-hmm.
So they all that money.
They wasted,
you know, they caused a huge amount of trauma to everyone who had to watch that and to the medical professionals who had to experience it and fail.
And to the family of the victim who, all his victims, but particularly the victim he was being executed for, all of these things. Like, seriously?
It's so stupid.
Yeah. Yeah, a good $50,000 in funds to not be able to find a vein. And health-wise, it was obvious they weren't going to be able to find a vein.
Yeah. So they're not going to try this again.
No.
They won't dare.
Well,
so far, no. He has a cruel and unusual claim right now, and there's a stay.
Mm-hmm.
Because, you know, they tried to kill him for an hour, and it didn't work. And that is, by definition, cruel and unusual.
Well, you know, IDOC is calling it an unsuccessful execution. His attorneys are calling it a botched execution.
Yeah. Remember how they said, this is not a fail. No one failed. I don't think you know what that word means.
Yeah.
Oh, Carrie, I love this. Carrie's old Bugs Bunny quote here. We must look like the maroons of the world. Yes, an old Bugs Bunny quote. I totally get it. Yeah.
For sure. Yeah. Oh, Sherry said, I am a nurse. I send people to vascular centers all the time. It's always due to lower extremities or the heart. Interesting.
Oh. They say that they tried every appendage, basically, and other places too. So, forehead, maybe. I don't know.
Yeah. So just, there you go. Thomas Creech is not healthy and wasn't probably healthy enough to even attempt this. But
no, not at all. Now I'm going to tell you a story, honestly, that's just going to piss you off. And it's pissed me off, too. Oh, and no. I'll tell you there's something you can do about it. This is the story of little Zeke. Zeke is 11 years old. Zeke has autism. He's non-speaking, but he is not non-verbal. So, you know, we all know kids who have pretty significant autism who make sounds that express their emotions. They are, in fact, communications, but they aren't words, right? And this is not an Idaho case, thank God, but it totally could be. Totally could be. But this is actually in California. So what's happening with poor little Zeke's family is that so Zeke and his mom were living with Zeke with mom's parents. And Zeke loves to play outside and run around and play, and he's, you know, vocalizing as autistic children do. Mm-hmm. And his neighbor has called the landlord, he has called the police, and is now suing these people because of the sounds that he makes. And they just make her uncomfortable and she doesn't like it. Mm-hmm. So she wants to sue them for $25,000 mm-hmm. because he's a public nuisance.
Yeah.
A disabled child mm-hmm. is being called a public nuisance.
Yep. For making noises in their own yard in the middle of the day.
Yeah. Like, what?
Yeah.
It's gotten so bad that mom and Zeke have had to move out of the grandparents' house.
Yep.
Because this neighbor harasses the living shit out of them. And mm-hmm. the mom is now countersuing the neighbor for all of this stupid harassment and what a bunch of bullshit this is. But so go to a website called, Katie, will you just post this in the chat? It's called A Friend Like Zeke. And their story is there. Mom, I think, has written a book. Like, she's doing some good things and trying to educate people about children with autism. And like, hey, kids with autism, they do express themselves. They make sounds.
Mm-hmm.
Not sorry about it. You know, it's just so gross. Can you imagine being this woman who thinks that you have the right to sue the family of a disabled child and call a disabled child a public nuisance? He's not like outside screaming and, you know, in the middle of the night and stuff like that. He's just out communicating the way that he communicates.
Yeah.
It's so gross. I just can't even, this woman is so gross. I mean, she referred to Zeke and the noises he makes is disgusting and that they make her uncomfortable and all this weird shit. And I'm like, lady, that sounds like a big ol' you problem. Mm-hmm.
That doesn't sound to me like Zeke needs to move. That sounds to me like she needs to move to a deserted island. Mm-hmm. And then she can, you know, sue the birds for singing.
Yep. Yeah, right. Exactly. Yeah, she is countersuing because this woman has harassed the living shit out of these people and pressured the landlord to force them to move. So now Zeke and mom have moved out of the house and Zeke can't visit his grandparents at the house because this has gotten so bad.
Yeah.
Can you even fathom?
But we have to ask the question. This is a Hispanic family.
Yeah.
Is this just racism? Is it just racism? Maybe. I mean, it's ableism too, obviously, but is it just born in more fucking racism? It really makes you wonder if that's what this is really at the core of. This is this lady a racist that is just determined that this Hispanic family doesn't get to disturb her peace?
Or an ableist, you know?
Yeah. Or just like,
it is so gross and horrible. And they've talked with other neighbors.
Yeah, towards Zeke, articles. Jessica. Yeah.
Yeah, towards Zeke. What, what some of the other neighbors have said, that if Zeke's outside, you know, he's kind of loud. Okay. They're like, well, we just close our door or close our window.
Sure.
Like, it's okay. We can deal, you know. Mm-hmm. Zeke, you know, loves to be outside.
When my windows are open, the traffic going by is too loud and I close the window.
Right.
I don't understand this. If it's too loud outside or there's something outside you don't like, how is this not so hard to just do something about it and shut it down?
Right. No, because this is the type of person we're dealing with here. I imagine she's one of those people that it sues everyone for everything and mm-hmm. is quite sure that, you know, the only person that matters in the entire world is her.
Yeah.
But going after an autistic boy like this is just so gross. Like, what the fuck, lady?
Good point, Neil. Has she not heard of the public accommodation part of our Constitution?
Right. That's the thing. How can this go anywhere? There's no one, you know.
Oh, I hope it goes right to court, and I hope the judge makes an absolute fool out of this woman.
I hope so, too, and I hope that the mom wins her countersuit.
Me, too.
Because what a bunch of crap to put them through. And poor mom is like, you know, I'm a single mom with a pretty seriously disabled child. We're just doing our best here, you know?
Yeah.
Right. We all have the right to exist, Neil. Exactly.
Yeah. Yeah.
It's just insane.
Yep. That is real entitled bullshit. Well,
so anyway, we'll all be check out their website. Zeke. You know, you can learn more about what's going on. Right. Yeah, exactly, Amy. You can be as loud as you want till 8 p.m. Right. See, we have that too. We have a city curfew. Mm-hmm. I think it's 10 here. But exactly. Like, what the hell? And like, you're such a terrible person that you're going to attack a disabled kid and his family? Horrible.
And with a straight face, go to court with that and think that you're going to find friends?
Whew. Yeah. Well, the question really is, who is the attorney who took her case? Like,
yeah.
Come on.
Somebody who can hold their nose and accept the pay.
Yeah, pretty much. Yes.
Yep. I hope the judge has a disabled child or a disabled grandchild.
Right.
So they can just really lay it to her. And I really hope it's on video so that we can blast it across the internet and see her get a very public smackdown.
Let's hope. Yes, I agree.
Hope upon hope.
We all want it. Just like that guy, Alpha Dom on TikTok. I don't know if y'all know about him, but he has had his ass handed to him about a million times for a video in which he says he's a dating coach and that men do not have to accept rejection. They don't have to take no for an answer, basically.
Yeah.
He's been dragged across the internet, right and left and up and down, and deserved it 100%. And I think that this chick deserves the same thing.
Yeah, he's become quite the TikTok star. it's great. What I really love is all the men that are responding to his video.
Yes.
Going, what the hell are you talking about? Yeah.
Yeah, it's funny. You should go look for it. If you're a TikToker, go look for the Alpha Dom stuff. Mm-hmm. Because frankly, sometimes we're all pretty good at policing ourselves. And this is one of those times.
Oh, yeah.
I sure wish we could, you know, maybe get a hold of the contact info for this stupid neighbor for the same reason. But anyway, I'm not advocating harassment. I will say that. But two things. So, Katie, I'm going to have you do our last case we were going to cover, but we have some extra time tonight. So I wanted to say, if you have other questions about Chad Daybell's trial or about that case, please put them in the chat. We've done two shows this week, kind of doing a wrap up of what's happened up to this point. And everybody, lots of people have had great questions. We've answered as many as we could in those two shows. But if you have more, please throw them up in the chat right now. And we'll do some of that here at the end of this show. So I'll give you time to do that. Well, Katie, you can tell us what's up with Corey Richens.
Dear God. Okay. Imagine your partner dying of an oxy overdose. It happens. It used to happen a lot more. It was a thing, you know?
Mm-hmm.
That was clear back in the early 2000s. And then carrying on with life, clear into the 2020s, when fentanyl became so dangerous and such a thing, and your son-in-law dying from a suspicious fentanyl overdose. Imagine if you're Corey Richin's mother. Well, that's exactly what the case is. Corey Richin's mother's partner died of an oxy overdose. And she is now under suspicion for potentially assisting Corey in the poisoning of Eric Richin's. I have so many questions because, first of all, obviously, Corey must have known something about it, what her mother, you know, allegedly or potentially could have done.
Right.
To have the idea to do it to Eric. She and her mom are super, super close. According to her phone records, they were speaking many times every day, both business-wise and personally. And there was just, there's an intense amount of scrutiny on her right now. And as we know now, there is an open investigation into her because of this. And there's been some search warrants carried out actually last spring. It's really interesting. Her name is Lisa Darden. So investigators mm-hmm. believe she could have possibly been involved in planning and orchestrating the death of Corey's husband, according to mm-hmm. the affidavit, the search warrant.
Holy shit.
Yep.
Well, and are they considering reopening the old case?
I don't know.
Makes you wonder.
Yeah, well, you'd think so. Yeah. But also, not long before the partner died, guess what was acquired? If you guessed
Oxy. The
big old insurance policy, you would be correct.
Oh, no.
These cases are mirrors of each other in a lot of ways.
That is insane. That is so scary.
Yeah.
To think this might not, I mean, is this a Lori Vallow kind of situation?
Is it?
Where, how many bodies are there around these women?
Seems like more investigation is called for, but it looks to me like it's happening. So pretty freaking interesting. Yep. Follow the money, right?
Yikes.
Yep. Yep. Yep.
It also seems risky and stupid that they're going to figure this out at some point, that police will figure it out, that mother had a partner who died of an overdose. Then, you know, Corey is charged. Like, why would you choose that way to kill your spouse? Think stupid. It would make you a little, would make the whole situation look a little more sketchy, I would think.
You'd think so. Yeah. Yeah. So there you go. Why can't Mormons divorce instead of kill? These guys, I don't think actually were Mormon, maybe Mormon adjacent, but, but divorce is a big black eye in the LDS church. It is.
It is. Yeah. Unfortunately. And I'm seeing a lot of spouse murder recently.
And people that have been sealed in the temple. Just because you get legally divorced doesn't mean you get temple divorced. There has to be a very, very good reason for it. And even then it's hard to get.
Mm-hmm.
An instance in a family that we know, dad was discovered to have been sexually abusing one of the teenage daughters. And actually, I think all of the kids, she was just the youngest and got caught. And mm-hmm. mom moved to a different town to get away from him, got divorced, asked for a temple divorce, was denied it in the town she was initially living in, moved actually to Rexburg of all places, where she got connected to a new bishop, her new bishop, and spilled her guts about everything that had just happened in their family and how disappointed and upset she was that she could not get a temple divorce from this person. And he went, huh? Yeah, this isn't happening. So he actually orchestrated and managed to get her not only this guy hadn't even been excommunicated, managed to cause enough fluff that he got excommunicated, the perp, and she finally got her temple divorce. But that was just because that bishop really listened and cared and went the extra mile. Obviously, the bishop in the town they lived in didn't give a flying F about it. But yeah, yes, that's why, because mm-hmm. getting a temple divorce is hard. There has to be a really, really good reason for it. And if not, in Mormon people's minds and LDS people's minds, you are still married for time and all eternity to that person.
Mm-hmm. And that when you die, you'll still be married to your abusive spouse.
Mm-hmm. Or just your yes, spouse. Yes, Jerry, you didn't want
it's
anymore.
Called Bishop Roulette. That is what mm-hmm. it's known as.
Yep.
Within the communities here and mm-hmm. in Utah. Just depends on which bishop you get, if you get help with that or not.
Yep. Yep.
As in the case of child sexual abuse, domestic violence, any of it.
Yeah.
It depends. If your bishop is a good person or if they're a piece of shit.
Mm-hmm. It's if wild. They're going to enable abusers or not. Oh my God. There's a story out of Utah right now about a psychiatric hospital.
Yeah.
A children's psychiatric hospital. Or at least that has a children's wing, that apparently has just fired their director, or the director has quit. It wasn't, they're not totally sure yet in the news mm-hmm. anyway. This place is known as the Rape Hospital. The Rape Hospital. Why? Because they have had more sexual assaults in the hospital on psychiatric patients, juvenile psychiatric patients, than any other facility in the state. This place has been investigated and closed 4 times, and they are back open and back in action.
And why that is, well, welcome to Utah.
Yep.
Bunch of bullshit right there.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, so we do have a couple of minutes left, and we do have some questions, so let's get there. Connie wanted to know if we've seen the interview with Larry Woodcock that came out today. Mm-hmm. Yeah, Katie, you were telling me about it. You want to tell us about it?
Yeah, I don't have a lot to say about it, except for that Larry said that he would be very cool with Chad sitting in prison for the rest of his life. They're not all that down on the death penalty. They would rather just see him have to rot in prison.
Well, and they'd said that before during Lori's trial, too, that they think that's the easy way out.
Yeah.
And that they should have to spend their lives in prison. And I am in agreement with that. I mean, the death penalty has tons of problems. And mm-hmm. you know, life in prison is a pretty terrible punishment all on its own.
Yeah. Now, they are coming, of course, for the trial. They'll be in Boise. And a lot like mm-hmm. last time, they're planning on attending, unless it's a day where autopsy photos will be shown. And then Larry will attend and Kay will not. So there's a victim's advocate that works between them and the prosecutor's office that kind of helps to, you know, give them a heads up on these things because Kay doesn't want to see those things. She doesn't want him to be burned in her brain. So
no,
of course. Larry said he feels like
having seen them.
Yeah. He said that's one of the things that he feels like kind of ties him to or endears him to the jury is that they've all seen them, you know,
yep.
They had to sit through that. And so did he and mm-hmm. things like that. So, but anyway, that's what's going on with them. They act very optimistic, you know, and mm-hmm. just ready to get this behind them so they can move on.
Right. Absolutely.
Well, because now then they got to move right on to Arizona for Charles.
For Charles. Christy says, do you think any of the people who provided testimony for the prosecution in Lori's case will be witnesses in Chad's case? Also, whatever happened to the DNA testing of the garden tools?
Hmm. Well, yeah. On witnesses, we're going to see a ton of the same witnesses.
Yeah.
Most of the same witnesses, yes.
Yeah, it'll be mostly the same people.
But they have put something in place this time that is, the prosecution is asking for a remedy or a penalty that's can be shared with witnesses when they are subpoenaed to let them know that if you fuck around, you're going to find out. If you're going to pull the Melanie Pawlowski and read some shit and then show up and say, I just can't testify because I broke the rules. Silly little me. That they can go, nope, here's the penalty, miss. So that'll be interesting. Mm-hmm. Hopefully that shuts that kind of stuff down.
We know that's specifically for her. I mean, it applies to all of them, but she's the one that fully got out of testifying by doing that last time. Oh, shit. Mm-hmm. And everybody wants to see her on the stand because we haven't seen her, you know, penalized in any way so far.
Yep.
Whatever happened to the DNA testing of the garden tools? Was that the DNA testing that Pryor wanted? Okay. It never got done.
No.
It was bullshit. He used it as a reason to get Chad's case severed from Lori's. Mm-hmm. And
seemed to think the prosecution would go ahead and do it, and they didn't.
They had already said, we're not doing it.
Yep. I mean, two labs have already said that sample is too small, and so we're not going to spend the time and money. I mean, that could easily be $20,000, $30,000 at a specialty lab to have that done. And so the prosecution said, there's just no reason for it. And Pryor's like, that could be exculpatory. How could that be exculpatory? How? So what? Your son-in-law's DNA's on it? Because you used those tools on those children in September and you weren't arrested until June? Anybody's DNA could have been on it. Your neighbor came by and borrowed a tool or came and visited with you while you were working in your shop or something?
Yeah.
I mean, who are you going to throw under the bus with that, Chad? Your kids? Because that's probably who it would have been. If anybody, it's so dumb.
Yeah, if anybody that wasn't Chad or Alex.
Yeah.
The whole thing was a ploy. It was a ploy the whole time to get those cases severed, and that's what he wanted.
Yep. But the prosecution said, you can have it, and you can do it, but we're not doing it. He seemed to think they would have to. I think he thought they would have to.
Yes, I think maybe he did, or he just saw it as an opportunity in the moment.
Yeah.
But they've never done anything, you know, and he got the cases severed with the unintended consequence of Lori got the death penalty dropped because of that, and he didn't. So, anyway, let's see. Sherry says, I'm mixed up about all the Melanies and who is Julie. Also, what did Summer say on the tape?
Ooh. Okay. There's two Melanies. There's Melanie Gibb. Melanie Gibb was Lori's good friend and was also Chad's friend. Melanie Gibb was at Lori's house the weekend that JJ went missing and had a lot of contact with Lori. There's one particular episode of ours that I highly recommend you go listen to. It's called The Scripture Dance Off. Yes, you heard that right. The Scripture Dance Off.
Yeah.
And it is a phone call.
It's a throwback to our days in seminary.
And it's a conversation that Lori had, well, that Melanie had with Lori and Chad while they were on the lam in Hawaii. And she taped it because she finally realized, Melanie's kind of an idiot. And she finally realized that, oh my God, they used me. They made me lie to the police. They maybe have done something terrible. I don't know what I'm doing. I might get in trouble. So she called them and made this phone call. Go listen to it before the trial if you have a chance. It's something. That's Melanie 1. Melanie 2 is Melanie Pulowski, formerly Melanie Boudreau. And she is Lori's niece. Lori had a sister that died that was super sick and died when Melanie was a little girl. Mm-hmm. And so they've all kind of taken turns having her under their wing. There's a lot that goes into that story as well. A very ugly custody situation with Melanie's bio dad, who did mostly raise her after Mama died. But at any rate, she and Lori were pretty good sidekicks. They lived near each other in Arizona. Mm-hmm. And they spent quite a bit of time together. Her husband, ex-husband, Brandon Boudreau, is the person that they attempted to kill. They shot at him in his Tesla. Alex shot at him, we believe, in his Tesla in Arizona, luckily missed. But that's who Melanie Pulowski is. After they had been divorced or in the process of divorcing when that happened. And then she married a man from Rexburg because she moved here to be neighbors to Lori briefly. And met a guy by the name of Ian Pulowski and very rapidly married Ian Pulowski. That's who that Mel is. I think
very stupidly on his part.
Mm. Immediately had a baby.
After they got married, she told him all this shit.
Mm-hmm.
Said, by the way, all this stuff's going on with me and my family, right after they got married.
Ian's one of the reasons that these guys got busted.
He is, yeah.
Because he actually did talk to the police and he actually did ask lots of questions and make a record.
Well, and his ex-wife turned over a computer that had some information on it.
Yeah.
Crazy. And so then the summer phone call, that was the phone call that happened in Arizona early in the case. She was, Rob Wood and some police were in Arizona learning about that side of the case. And he had a conversation with Summer. So Summer Shiflett is Lori's sister. And they were having this conversation with Summer's attorney present. He recorded the conversation without telling Rob Wood, which was just shitty and rude.
Yeah.
And this is the conversation they had where Rob kind of said, "Hey, I'm a Mormon. I know you're a Mormon," that kind of stuff. And then said, "Hey, I think your sister really needs to get a better attorney because her attorney doesn't know what he's doing. And we kind of think that Chad is the ringleader of all this. And she probably better get a better attorney and like flip on him." That was the conversation.
Yeah.
Summer didn't really say a lot in the conversation. It was mostly Rob talking.
Yeah.
And that, you know, they've tried to get him booted off the case and made a witness and stuff like that. A couple of times the defense has over that, which is just super dumb. Let's see, real quick. Neil says, "Does anybody besides me think that Chad will take a plea before the trial? I just cannot picture him going through with the trial where all of his dirty laundry will be aired, plus he's guilty AF."
Yeah.
I mean, I think we all think it.
Yeah.
But there have been a lot of opportunities already for this to happen, and it has not happened. And the rumors we have heard, or not so much rumor, more source we have heard from, is that, you know, the opportunity to plead guilty to all charges and they'll take the death penalty off the table is a possibility, but that he won't accept that. That he has wanted ridiculous things like time served and stuff like that, which is like, what the hell?
Or drop whole charges, you know.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So let's see. Yeah. Is Ian Pawlowski a part of Chad's inner circle dooms? No.
No.
He isn't. He didn't know anything about any of this until he very stupidly married Melanie Boudreau. He didn't know any of this.
Allegedly, I'll say that to protect myself, was just a horny idiot that thought Melanie was beautiful and fell for her real fast. Yeah.
Yeah, they were trying to get her married off real quick after she and Brandon got divorced, because the whole 144,000 thing that they're, you know, leading the 144,000 people that are going to usher in the second coming, blah, 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 was that you had to be a married couple, of course, a straight married couple. And so we couldn't have all Melanie being single. That's why they also hurried and got possibly gay Alex married off to Zulema Pastenis for the same reason. So those are the things we know. It is time for us to go, because we are going to be back here in about 15 minutes with the watch party. So you should be able to see that if you're a member of the channel, if you've joined the channel, have the subscription. Anyway, you'll see that it's already scheduled, but we are watching Lover, Stalker, Killer on Netflix. So come on over and join that. It's going to be a pretty good time. Remember, you watch it on your device. We just have a live chat available. So we'll be in the chat and we'll help you out with our outrage over this case. And with that, thank you all so very much for being here.
Thanks, guys. Take care.
True Crime Squad.